His heart's in the right place, he tries to do the best he can.
Is that for me?
He's very fond of you, he'd be lost without you, mate.
Well, I'm very fond of him,
isn't he? I know you are. You two get on like an arse, I'm sure. Of course you'll have your squabbles. Well, I've been
going.
Well,
squabbles,
well, you know, we... Ha ha! I have been there all the time, though.
He gets a bit...
You know, you're sort of... You get aerated.
I get worried about him,
you know. Yeah, well, he'll be all right.
And you're right now, isn't
he? Well, he's not worrying and doing about him now, are you? He's not seriously ill or anything.
No, I hate leaving him when he's not well. So, Mickey?
What?
George and I were talking the other day whether there's anybody can draw anybody to us who could tell us something about the evolution of man, the progression of man.
Oh, well,
that sounds rather big order, but...
Yeah, it's all right, isn't it?
that's the other way I can put it, but I suspect they, when George was talking about it the other day, they would understand what he meant.
Well, I understand, yes. That's a lovely day. I thought George would have been out of his mind yesterday.
Well, he was frightened, you see. He felt all this screaming. Yeah,
and,
you know, and he thought, well, perhaps the train up
and
the train, he got to
Trafalgar
and found he couldn't make it or something like that. So he thought
it'd better
to stay quiet.
Well, at least he's sensible,
isn't
he, if he don't feel up to it.
Well, next time I hope he'll. Hello?
Yes,
I know, quickly.
Yes, I can speak.
Come along, friend, so we can hear you. I can hear you.
Where's your friend today?
He's not very well today.
Oh, I'm very sorry to hear that. Will you tell him that we're hoping he'll be quite fit and well again soon?
Yeah.
Be able to come next time.
Wednesday, yeah. Yeah?
Well, as a matter of fact, it touched on so many different points that one would need many sessions to discuss at length the many facets of myself of the conversation.
Yeah?
But of course, naturally, we are particularly anxious and very concerned indeed about the immediate future of man. Certain experiments which are taking place and others which are about to take place, which could be very dangerous, not just for the individuals concerned, but for the whole human race. I feel that one should be aware of these problems, these terrible complexities which must and will arise. One can only hope and pray that the immediate future will prove to men, to those particularly concerned, the very strong imminent danger to human life which could and may well arise from certain things that are happening. I'm not suggesting that man should cease completely these experiments. Experiments, some of them, are very necessary and indeed justifiable. But we are concerned about bringing into Earth conditions certain matter, certain substances, certain gases, which could, not perhaps immediately, be detrimental to man's health and well-being, but at a later stage. You know, this may all sound very strange to some who may be listening to what I say. Indeed, there may be those who are inclined to ridicule, and certainly those, should they ever hear what I say, those in certain places who are responsible for these experiments, they no doubt are so clouded over in their minds by the intensity of their thoughts concerning their experiments, that they would ignore it anyway. But I must admit that there is a certain amount of uncertainty, and indeed, in some directions, a certain amount of fear as to what man, in his ignorance, may do to his world. I don't think man realizes the immensity of this whole business. As things are, it seems to me that man is bent on destruction in various ways, whether it is on Earth or whether it is going into outer space, landing on the moon, and possibly at a later stage, who knows, on other planets. All these varying planets are different. They have their own particular atmospheric condition. They have their own conditions which in their own fashion, necessary though they are to that particular world, could be so opposed to man, so opposed in a sense that if man were to try to harness, as he may well do, certain aspects of life and condition of life on the moon, for instance, he will find that over a period of time he could well bring into the Earth environment and condition certain substances, gases, which could be very, very bad for future generations. I don't suggest that this will happen immediately. There may not appear to be any immediate effect, but you are bringing, or will be bringing, into the emanation of Earth substances so subtle, so fine, that scientists on your side could not even be aware of them, certainly couldn't analyze them. But of course, the danger is that once man has reached a certain point, he will not be satisfied to try to go further afield. He will experiment in various ways, and he may well rue the day when these experiments started, because it's not natural. The world, your world, has its own natural conditions, its own natural substances, its own natural gases. It is a world unto itself. But once you are out, as it were, of that environment or condition, away from its pull in the atmosphere, you are entering into something which is quite, quite different. So far, man has been safeguarded in his experiments by various scientific apparatus. The time will come when this apparatus will not be sufficient, and contamination can enter into the condition of those involved, which can spread rapidly. This, to my way of thinking, is a tremendous danger which man, scientifically minded though he may well be, with his knowledge, has not seriously appreciated or understood. You know, it seems to me that there comes a time and a point with man when he loses all sense of proportion in his intensive interest in his scientific experiment. He ceases to think, he ceases to even act as other people do. I suppose one might call this a form of dedication, which, when it is used in certain respects, is an extremely good thing for man. But when you are dealing with certain things which are beyond man's range, and it was never intended that the moon, for instance, should be within man's range, I think one has to then face up to the fact that you are not only probing into the unknown, but you are unconsciously opening up a door which may not prove to be a door entering upon knowledge, but a door upon disaster. And this, I feel, is the big problem that man has not fully appreciated with all his experience, knowledge, and scientific and technical expertise. He has not realized the tremendous possibilities that may come that are detrimental. Man sees this as another step forward in man's evolution, but his object and purpose is not purely scientific or for the good of man. It is, I regret to say, obviously, in certain instances particularly, for the detriment of certain nations. You see, it seems to me that man's whole intent and purpose in this is not purely experimental, is not purely scientific, is not purely for the good of the mass of humanity, but it is visualized as being able to build stations so that the whole world can come under the eye, as it were, of the nation who achieves and builds these stations which they intend to build, landing stations, eventually, not yet, but later. And I think the whole idea is that who masters the moon masters the world. This is another aspect that in itself is frightening, quite apart from the dangers. Because I'm going to stick, as you might say, my neck out and say that they'll never reach that state, they'll never reach that ability to build on the moon stations, that they will find that they will come up against certain atmospheric conditions alone, apart from other conditions of the moon itself, that will prevent them from doing certain things they have in mind. I'm not suggesting there will not be landings, and I'm not suggesting that there will not be successful landings and also return to Earth. But I'm more concerned with, in a sense, the return to Earth of individuals and also equipment, which could, in its own fashion, create a certain set of circumstances which would be hidden, unknown to even the most scientific mind on Earth. In other words, nothing is presumably going to be apparent, nothing is going to be visible, nothing is going to be detected. And what people do not realize is that there are minds at work, there are mentalities at work, there are entities at work. And they are working on the other side, that is the astral condition around Earth, also endeavoring to bring into being certain elements which, if they were given enough power, could take over. Now this may sound like science fiction or something, but what people don't realize is that it isn't only a matter of going into outer space, landing on a certain sphere, landing on a particular world, but to reach this, you are piercing the atmosphere, you are piercing worlds invisible, you are piercing worlds which are within the auric emanation or range of Earth, on which or in which there are forms of existence and life and mentalities. There are souls who are very unprogressed. There are conditions of life which are very, very near the Earth but have no power over it. These experiments of which we are talking are opening up, or can open up, certain fields. I don't know how to put this technically into words, but fields of radiation. And this is a mental radiation, apart from a radiation of certain matter which can affect your world, can affect the natural conditions of your world, can affect the growth of man, can affect the growth of nature, can affect the animal kingdom. I'm not saying that these things are going to happen, but I am saying that all these experiments of man are interfering with balances, are interfering with conditions, interfering with environments, interfering with subtle minds at work. The subtleties of these things one cannot explain, because there are no ways that one can explain. But one must remember that all life is a mental process. It may not always manifest itself through a body. It may not always manifest itself through a shape. It may not manifest itself as you understand it at all. But in some shape or form, there is a manifestation of many forms of life in and around the earth, reaching up and outwards to the varying other worlds upon which certain worlds, entities do live, of a much higher order than man himself. These too, from certain spheres or planets, have at varying times made contact with Earth, but they have been denied, to a certain extent, the opportunity to converse with man. I'm not suggesting here that there have not been isolated instances of souls from other planets who have not in some way or other manifested themselves mentally. There are contacts that have been made of a mental nature, and in consequence appearances of individual souls from other planets have manifested. But generally speaking, for a very long time, there have been manifestations around the Earth of mentalities from other planets who are concerned, very much concerned, at the motives of man and the experiments of man and the effect that certain things could have, not only in the immediate future but at a later date, upon your world in particular, and to some extent on astral worlds around the earth, invisible to the human eye. You see, man assumes anything that is visible is a real thing. The moon is a reality because it is visible, it is tangible, and soon he'll be landing upon it. And as indeed are other worlds of which he as yet knows nothing. But these are the so-called visible worlds, but the invisible worlds, these are invariably, though not always, the more highly evolved worlds. These are the worlds of the mind and of the spirit, and these are the worlds which man has not seen and cannot see because he is of a different substance and a different composition. But it is with the mind and the spirit that many of these things will eventually come into being and be harnessed. These forces, these powers, and man will become aware of them. This is what we hope. But the point is that there is a great deal of concern at the present moment of these experiments which are taking place and the dangers that could ensue from the releasing of certain matters which could affect, certainly will affect, Earth. These are things that we are hoping to prevent. There's things that we want very much to avoid. Man may achieve a certain success as far as the moon is concerned, but it must, to some extent, be diminished and eventually, we hope, proven to man impractical and rather, shall we say, pointless and useless. If we can do this, if man himself must do this, really, it isn't what we can do. One can only hope that man will see the futility. He will perhaps be satisfied with having achieved so much, and then perhaps, we hope, will leave it at that. But if he were to pursue it too far, and one may not be sure of this, but that men could do certain things which could be so detrimental that one can only hope that in the initial stages he'll see the dangers. This is what we're hoping will happen, that he will not go too far. There is still the doubt, fortunately, I say fortunately, which may sound to the ears of some on earth rather an appalling statement to make. There is still the possibility that man will not successfully land on the moon, or if he does, he will never return. This may sound rather callous, but it is better that two or three lives should be lost than perhaps the whole of humanity suffer.
Yeah.
For you see, man cannot live on the moon. He cannot exist on the moon. Or if he did, it would all be in such an artificial way, with so much artificiality about it in so many different forms, that it would be quite impractical to live in a human way, that is. And therefore one can only hope that the early landings, assuming that they do succeed and are able to send back messages to Earth concerning it, will prove in the early initial stages of futility, which then we can only hope will satisfy man's curiosity sufficient for him to cease. This would be the satisfactory answer. This would be the best thing that could happen. Because if too much were allowed to continue, the eventual tragedy which would be brought upon Earth would be appalling. For a long time, certain souls from certain outer spheres have endeavored to make a contact in a subtle way, and it has had to be done in a very subtle way. But of course, no notice has been taken by those in higher places, particularly those who are scientifically so involved that they are not interested and wouldn't listen if they did take some interest. They wouldn't accept it. You see, we are faced, all of us, with a position which one can only say can be brought to a satisfactory conclusion by man's realization within himself of the futility of further experiment beyond a certain point. Nothing we can do or say can alter the fact that man must find himself how far he can go. And this seems to me to be the only answer. If he were to go too far, then I'm sure that disaster would follow eventually. It may not be immediately, but at a later date, because you would be releasing forces, releasing conditions, releasing certain substances and gaseous matter which could eventually descend upon Earth in such a way that it could destroy to a great extent life as you know it. This is the great danger. But of course we can only hope and pray that man will reach a certain point and then cease. I'm not saying that there could not also be some good. There's always, as in most things, the good and the bad. I think that man can learn certain things, and I think he's already learned certain things in his experiments, and he can. There's no reason why I shouldn't have satellites in the atmosphere which can be beneficial to man, but they certainly cannot, as far as I can see, be built. There cannot be stations on the moon that would be satisfactory. This, I think, is a danger. It's not so much the entering into space that is a danger, but attempting to land upon a planet and to live upon it and to utilize it for, as they might say, the benefits of the human race. I think that this is impractical, and I would say well nigh impossible, and certainly highly dangerous. Anyway, some future time, yes, we can discuss these things more at length. At the moment, it's not possible.
May I ask your name, friend?
Yes, my name probably won't convey a thing to you. My name is Grant.
Grant?
Yes, my name is John Grant.
George Grant?
John.
Well, John Grant. Well, you're a scientist, I know.
Well, I wouldn't dare call myself one, but I was always interested in science. And I've taken a great interest in these experiments latterly, and I can see the possibilities and the dangers. Anyway, perhaps next time you come, your friend, we can talk further and perhaps I can answer some questions. Anyway, don't be too distracted or depressed. I'm only telling you what I feel, what I have been given to understand. My husband's much more in a position to know than me, myself, usually.
Yes.
Anyway, it's been a pleasure talking. I hope I haven't depressed you too.
No, you've interested me very much, and I want other people to hear this, please.
Well, I must go now. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank
you. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mickey. Thank you, love.
Well, it's quite interesting. This still follows up what old Smiggy was getting on Saturday.